Hello and welcome to What's the Deal, our investment banking series here on JP Morgan's Making Sense podcast channel. I'm your host today, Kevin Foley, Global Head of JP Morgan's Debt Capital Markets Practice. I'm also joined by my colleague, Tariq Hamid, Head of North America Corporate Credit Research, as we just wrapped up the 29th Annual Global High Yield and Leverage Loan Conference in Miami, an industry-leading event for the debt capital markets business. Tariq, great to catch up after a busy week.
Thanks, Kevin. Great to be here.
Exciting and packed few days with panels, keynotes, one-on-ones with our issuers and borrower clients. 3,000 people attended, which is a record for us. For our listeners, I really want to hit on the key themes discussed during the conference and what is most top of mind for our clients. Tariq, Jamie shared at the conference that the economy is booming with the support of a number of inflationary pressures that look to be continuing. However, concerns around a downturn remain, with Jamie sharing his views for the one-third probability of either a hard, soft, or no landing scenario. What did you gather from the conversation with clients and how they're thinking about the economy?
So if you look back, we had over 500 basis points of rate cuts in a 16-month period. And so coming out of that, there was really broad consensus that a recession was, frankly, inevitable. Yet, GDP grew 3.2% in 4Q23. With most leading indicators and nowcasts pointing to similarly robust growth here in the first quarter. For comparison, the JPM Economics House view a year ago was for 4Q23 growth of 1.5%. So that narrative has shifted dramatically, with soft landing and frankly no landing scenarios now the dominant viewpoints from the investor community. There's always a natural tension between fears of growth and fears of rates. And that pendulum has definitely shifted much more to the rate side again, as folks start to push out their expectations of rate cuts from the spring into the summer. We had always had a house view that cuts would ultimately not occur until June, but we're still forecasting 125 basis points of cuts by year end. Now, underpinning that rate view is GDP growth decelerating to 0.5% in 2Q and 3Q. And I can say that the buzz at the conference was that was perhaps a bit too draconian for both our investor and lenders and our issuer slash borrower clients. Regardless, I would characterize the majority of our investor and issuer clients as probably a little bit more bullish on the economy even than Jamie. And I think also an underlying theme of, again, the resiliency of the economy through what has been an unprecedented monetary policy experience has been just remarkable.
Now, it's interesting. In meeting with a lot of CEOs and CFOs over the few days at the conference, it was clear that the concerns around the economic slowdown is not as prevalent amongst them. They continue to feel the resiliency. And you walk away, there's certainly that debate seems like it's shifted towards a soft to no landing and almost starting to take a no hard landing off the table. I think as Jamie pointed out in the discussion, it's probably a little bit premature because there's a lot of things still working its way that could have an impact. And I wouldn't take the hard landing off the table, but the sentiments definitely leans towards soft and no landing.
And so I guess, Kevin, as the sentiment has shifted a little bit and rate expectations have moved, we have seen loan financings up more than 300% and high-yield financings up around 90% from about a year ago. We walked into 2024 with the market pricing in 6 rate cuts. Now, given that shift in expectations towards no landing, we're seeing the market and Fed converge with futures pricing in about half that amount of rate cuts in 2024. Given that more muted rate front, how do you think this will impact leveraged loan and high-yield market activity in the coming quarters?
So the attractiveness of the rates is pulling forward a lot of activity, that a lot of issuers still can see this potential risk on the horizon. Let's take the refinancing risk off the table. It feels more of the same in terms of, as you pointed out, heavy activity, but 90% of that being refinancing driven. We still have to see the animal spirits and M&A come back. So while I expect that we'll see the momentum in refinancing activity, investors taking advantage of an attractive window, I think we're still waiting on seeing M&A, whether it picks up or not. And to the extent we continue to see the economy hang in there, that's going to give more confidence around it. There's also an element of buyer and seller trying to find middle ground on pricing in terms of valuation for those trades to happen. And I think that's just going to be a matter of time. If the economic picture remains strong, then we'll start to see a pickup in that M&A discussions and starting to find those valuation levels. Building off that, Tariq, what are you hearing from clients on the M&A front?
Yeah, Kevin, I think that they really are. I think our investor and lenders and company clients generally agree that we're going to see a lot more M&A. From the issuer standpoint, you have equity market performance that's been really remarkable over last year. Probably not as broad-based, frankly, as CEOs would like, but remarkable in the context of all of the rate increases that we've seen. Additionally, you've had really strong earnings. You've had really positive guidance as well. So we track earnings and guidance pretty carefully in high-yield research. And so what we're seeing in 4Q23 earnings is 1.4 times as many companies guiding up versus guiding down for 2024. So you combine that with very clean balance sheets, all the dry powder on the sidelines, you know, over $2 trillion potentially that could be deployed. It's a really potent brew for M&A. Additionally, you've had a very active FTC under the current administration. Heading into the election and even post-election, it's very reasonable to think that that will be a little bit more amenable to transactions. From the lender and investor standpoint, people want M&A not just for change of control payments and tenders and the positive impact that tends to have on returns. They also want M&A just because it creates more paper. There's a real desire for more paper and frankly, just for more new names to invest in. One of the big themes of the conference from the lender and investor communities was a desire for just new names and new opportunities to look at and to deploy capital into.
And it's interesting, from the issuer and borrower perspective, I can see some pent-up demand around the M&A activity levels building, right? In terms of you start to get into a holding pattern, you're not divesting of assets. In a Goldilocks scenario, with maybe you are start to see some economic slowdown, but not a hard recession, that starts to push them into finding growth. There are strategic things that companies want to do, while that if you get the confidence there's a stable backdrop in the economy and financing markets are attractive and stay at current or better levels, then you could see it setting up. There's $2 trillion of dry powder sitting with private equity shops right now with limited activity. So you can see that coming. You look at from a corporate standpoint as well, the strategic things companies need to do. A lot of that's been on hold. So I think a lot of things are lining up, whether that's in the back half of 24, but you could certainly see it building into 25 and 26.
Yeah, and I totally agree on that confidence point you made. I mean, CEO and board confidence is just such a big driver of these things actually coming to fruition.
So the other thing that was no shortage of discussion around was private credit. This topic of the du jour a year ago, it continues to be. So this year, we're hearing a lot of debate about private credit versus syndicated markets. We're starting to see what many would view as an inversion, that we saw a lot of things go private credit over the past 18 months, now coming back into the syndicated market. I know on our side, on average, the deals we've been taking from direct and refinancing, there's a 200 basis point saving. So really a lot of attractiveness to thinking about coming back to the syndicated markets. What are your thoughts on how you see this space evolving?
There certainly was no shortage of private credit content at our conference. Obviously, this is a topic that we've kind of written a lot about in our team's flagship Credit Watch publication, as well as a bunch of other different reports over the years. And, you know, a few years ago, when you first started to hear about estimates of private credit potentially growing to become a $2 trillion plus market eventually, there was an enormous amount of skepticism. I'd say now people don't really bat an eye at those forecasts. Our view has been and kind of continues to be that it's hard not to see these markets, so private credit, high yield bonds, leveraged loans, not all sort of growing together synergistically. If you think about high yield bonds and leveraged loans, over the last decade and a half, you've had capital ebb and flow between the two asset classes, and ultimately deal volume has ebbed and flowed between the two asset classes. And so if you think about the next 5 years, you'll see a very similar dynamic between private credit and syndicated markets. As capital ebbs and flows between private credit and syndicated markets, deal volume, again, is going to follow there. And I think it gives issuers and borrowers the opportunity to really optimize between speed and surety of outcome, rates, covenants, and ultimate all-in cost of capital. And I think that's a very powerful message to issuers and borrowers and a powerful asset to issuers and borrowers. From the lender and investor communities, I think they're thinking about it very, very similarly. Most of our big leveraged finance managers are looking to either build or buy private credit expertise. In some cases, it's because they actually want to be in the asset class. In other cases, it's because they have a big platform and they like to leverage that platform more. And I think in the third situation, you just have a lot of people who want to kind of put that toe into the water and sort of keep track of how this market ultimately evolves.
Tark, how about liquidity impacting the private credit markets?
So one of our panelists had a very interesting comment when you think about sort of liquidity in the context of private credit. So in the private credit market, you have a lot of folks arguing about liquidity and trading as a major pain point. And this panelist's point, which I think is very valid, is that one of the things liquidity potentially does in private credit is it creates the ability for new entrants to get into the market faster by sort of short-circuiting the need to build a huge origination platform to invest in originators. And so that's a really natural point of tension between incumbents and between new entrants. But if you think about this, eventually we will have stress, we will have a distress cycle, and we're going to need the ability to transfer risk from private credit managers to opportunistic capital. So it's really fascinating to think about how private credit will grow, how liquidity and trading of private credit will grow and evolve over the next couple of years.
Yeah, and it's that last part, evolve, is the operative word there in that statement from my perspective, because we're just in the midst of this evolution, right? I don't think what we see today is a status quo of very much parallel markets and it's an either or. I can see a convergence over time to hybrid approaches that at the end of the day, we're just talking about lending. This is not a new product, right? This is credit loans. It's been around for hundreds of years. And you're starting to see the landscape change in terms of how deals come together and the players in that. But I don't think that this is a parallel universe permanently, right? That the status quo today of here, it's either the direct loan market or the syndicated loan market. I think each will start to take on features of each other, and we can really see a full convergence to a hybrid approach over time. And then at the end of this, you mentioned that there are a lot of people are looking at existing players in the syndicated market or high yield market are looking to add a private credit leg to the stool. I think it's going to be one of many legs for a lot of major clients in the credit space.
I think that's 100% accurate. I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, you know, you have similar risk profiles. And so we're eventually going to solve as a market for how to share in that risk profile and how to price that risk profile appropriately, given somewhat smaller incidental changes in terms.
So, Tark, we always talk about fat tails, and Jamie's always mentioning that, what his focus is. So when you look back in 20 after the conference, we shortly after that had COVID shut down the world. Last year, we had the regional bank crisis post our conference. As I look at the rest of 24, what's your fat tail concerns?
So I think the one item that probably comes up the most right now is commercial real estate. Yet, when you look at it, if we're all talking about it, it's very hard for that to truly be a fat tail event. And so you put commercial real estate, you put interest rates, you almost have to put them to the side because they're so well understood at this point. What concerns me personally are geopolitics more than anything. We're in an incredibly unique environment with obviously the geopolitical conflicts ongoing in Russia and Ukraine, as well as in Gaza. And so I think between the two of those, you have two real potential hot points that could be very problematic. Historically, in markets, the right trade has always been to fade geopolitics, that they tend to not matter as much as we all worry and think they are. But those are things that keep me up at night.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because that's definitely one of the things we talked about with Jamie at the conference and reciting what Larry Summers had said the week before. Jamie's also been out there saying it frequently that there's a lot of potential for chaos in the geopolitical landscape, and we haven't seen this kind of environment in 80 years. And whether that's looking across Europe, Middle East, Asia, we've got an election here at home. There's a lot of things that are shifting out there. And while they're on the radar screen, still unclear where everything shifts. With that, I think we'll wrap it up. Tark, I want to say thank you. It's been a very insightful conversation.
Thanks, Kevin.
And I also want to say thank you to all our conference attendees and those who are listening today. I want to put a few reminders out there. We have our European High Yield and Leverage Finance Conference. It's going to run from September 4th to September 6th. That will be our 8th annual event in London. And we will also have our 30th annual Global High Yield and Leverage Finance Conference in Miami next February, running from February 24th to 26th. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for listening to What's the Deal? If you've enjoyed this conversation, we hope you'll review, rate, and subscribe to JP Morgan's Making Sense to stay on top of the latest industry news and trends. Available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and YouTube. To stay ahead of the curve, sign up for JP Morgan's In Context newsletter, packed full of market views and expert insights delivered straight to you. To subscribe, just visit jpmorgan.com/in-context. This material was prepared by the investment banking group of JP Morgan Securities LLC and not the firm's research department. It is for informational purposes only and is not intended as an offer or solicitation for the purchase, sale, or tender of any financial instrument.